another week, another episode of Pitch Invasion. Welcome to it, to each and every one of you. My name is Lwazi Siqubu.
I'm Xolo Makwaza, coming in at you like Nigel de Jong.
And all the way from Anfield, this is Emeka Enyadike, and you'll never walk alone.
You know what, I'm tired of these Liverpool fans. It's still early season, but anyway, Pitch Invasion, it's a podcast for football tribalists of all shapes and sizes. And what we do each and every week is try and tell it like it is as far as South African, African, and of course European football is concerned. And the good news for all football lovers is that a lot of the major leagues in Europe have gotten underway as well, but plenty of headlines coming out of England as usual. And Ola, as usual again, Jose Mourinho is not too far away from it.
No, it's almost like he's creating the headlines purposely these days. It's almost like, you know, he wants this attention. And, you know, I said this in our first podcast, which I'm sure millions of viewers remember, listeners. You know, I'm still not sure that Jose has got the right mindset for Manchester United. I don't think he gets it, and I think it's, you know, the cracks are starting to show now. He's not getting along with Ed Woodward. I think the Pogba being captain, I don't think he chose that. I think it was kind of forced upon him to keep Pogba at the club. And you saw now, you know, with Scholes and Mino Raiola getting at it, something's not happening at Manchester United. And in the middle of the storm is Jose Mourinho. And this could be his last season. I saw a report somewhere saying that, you know what, United could contact Zidane at some point and say, look, we might go a different direction at the end of the season if you're ready. Mm. And I don't see Jose staying after the season.
Well, if Zizou is available, why not go for him?
Well, I mean, look, it's 2 weeks into the season and I don't know why there's so much panic going on there. Let's see what happens in the next game. One thing is for sure, in the Mourinho has a record of always imploding in the third season. So people are actually right to speculate. But I just think that Man United has enough quality there for him to actually focus. Because if you remember what I said in the last two episodes that we've had, Mourinho tried to get certain players bought by the club. And the club is saying, look, we've got enough quality in the team. We don't want to spend unnecessary funds on certain players. I mean, Harry Maguire for 80 million.
No.
Not worth the price. Sorry. I mean, he's not in the same class as...
I don't even think he was in contention up until the World Cup. If it had not been for the World Cup,
exactly.
I don't think Harry Maguire
he's had one good season at Leicester. And suddenly he's worth 80 million.
So he wasn't going to improve on the defending.
So Mourinho complained all the way to the opening game of the season. Yeah. And you see how much United... I thought against Leicester, they came out to try and play. But in this game against Brighton, from start to finish, Brighton were just all over them.
But Emeka, right? Is United's problem the players as opposed to the coaching? And I ask this question because it's not like Jose... First of all, he finished second last year, granted by, you know, a landslide. But, you know, he has the players. You know, LVG finished second or third, I think it was, and he had a squad, you know, more terrible. There was no Pogba there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm looking at Jose and I'm thinking, we've given you this praise as being the special one, right? The guy who does miracles. You've done amazing things, right? Your CV speaks for itself. But isn't it time that you start saying, you know what? Let me pull a rabbit out the hat. Let me show you guys why I'm called the special one. And actually just galvanize the team and coach.
I agree with you 100%. Coach. Especially because it's not like he has to prove anything to anyone.
No.
So why is he still holding on to, you know what, let's not get hurt and then maybe we can try and look to hurt them.
Jose Mourinho will always be Mourinho. He plays, he has his siege mentality. Even when he doesn't need to to play the usual mind games. Unfortunately for him, now he's up against Pep Guardiola and Klopp, who ignore him.
Yeah.
You know, he tried to pick a fight with Conte. And you know, when Mourinho doesn't get anyone fighting him, then he has to create an internal battle.
You see, that's the thing. He's at Manchester United. This is aristocracy. And Mourinho's coming in, like, you know, showmanship, the special one. And he's got to be subservient at United, unfortunately. You're coming into traditional Manchester United, right? Sir Alex Ferguson, Bobby Charlton. I think that special one, you've got to just tone it down a bit and just go along with the establishment. And maybe that might soothe a few problems. But when you come out, you criticize your players, you criticize certain parts of ownership. Yeah. How does that bode well for you in terms of support from the club as a whole?
One thing is clear. If he goes on a losing streak, he's going to be fired.
Absolutely.
Maybe he wants to be fired. Mm. I don't know, because the way he's going, I don't see him being in contention for the league title this season.
Which would be a terrible shame, because as you have mentioned, he's got the players.
He's got the quality.
So it's come a time where, as a United fan, I'm just like, you know what? To answer your question, Ola, it's not the players. It's not the players. It's because we have seen, again, we're going to touch on Pogba, we have seen that if you give Pogba the license to do what he does best on the pitch, he will do it. But the minute you try and stifle his game, the minute you try and ask him to play within, you know, a certain box or a certain, you know, role and all of that stuff. And as much as, yes, it's professional football and Mourinho is the coach, so obviously it all starts and ends with him. But you've got to allow your players to just, you know, and I watched all the sort of the big games of the weekend. And one thing that resonated with me was how a lot of the other sides, the so-called big six, if I may put it that way, a lot of their players look so happy when they're playing on the pitch. United players, they do not look as if they're enjoying themselves.
If your coach is not happy,
which is ridiculous.
It's not even about the coach being happy. I think the players some of them have gone and played for their countries where they express themselves. Yeah. And then you're in this cocoon when you play for Mourinho. And I mean, you look at Manchester City, very exciting. Look at Liverpool, absolutely busting. You look at Tottenham.
Even Arsenal in defeat.
Arsenal in defeat. There was a moment in that game where I thought they had Chelsea's number. Absolutely. And then unfortunately, they didn't take their chances. So if you look at the season so far, all the top guns Chelsea has a new manager.
Yeah,
they're playing differently this season. But you know, with United, it's like some old lady.
Mm. Yeah, but I think you know, just to move on from this United thing as well. That article that Paul Ince was quoted in, I think that's terrible for him to say. He's just gone overboard talking about laughing stock. I'm like, who's laughing?
No, he's.
Yeah. I was just like, no, dude, come on, relax.
I must say that I kind of like the reaction from Mino Raiola.
He
said to him that if Winston Churchill was standing in front of him, he wouldn't know a leader.
Yeah, Paul Scholes as well. Exactly. You know, so there's a lot. It seems like there's a whole lot of doom and gloom as far as United are concerned. But as a fan,
it's just two weeks, and you know what?
Losing an away game in England is not unheard of. Yes, it was Brighton, but still, I mean, you know, what happens if United play well against Tottenham?
Maybe it tells you, you know, that you don't underestimate anything. Brighton has bought quietly, and you know, they bought cleverly some very good players. Yeah. And I thought they played on the front foot throughout that game.
And I mean, look, yeah, you're playing United at home. There's no reason for you not to try and express yourself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think there's way too much a reaction as far as United are concerned. But let's quickly talk about the transfer window, which, of course, in England has been now closed. Is this a good move, Ola? Is this a good move to have it shorter, especially, I feel, in a World Cup year where, you know, you sort of did limit a lot of the teams as far as their business is concerned?
It's a strange move because it's closed, but you can still lose your players.
Which is, you know what I mean?
So it's very strange because, I mean, if they give... Take now Real Madrid, you know, they decide, okay, guys, you know what? We're all in for Kane. Mm. And Tottenham cannot replace him. Mm. They trigger his release clause for some odd, you know, reason, and they decide we're bringing Kane in. Tottenham can't replace him.
Yeah.
It's a really strange move. I think, you know, they should just have all the windows aligned, and, you know, like they were doing last year from, you know, God knows when they started the window, close at the same time, end of August, and that's it. Because now there are some teams who you have invested, you know, in the season, and they could lose some of their star players. Yeah. And I think that's unfair on the English teams. They've done their business. Uh-huh. They've signed early. Mm. But you could still face... I mean, there's reports coming from Spain that, you know, Barcelona are lining up a deal to see if they can get Pogba in there. Mm. And I think, you know, it's unfair on English teams. Like I said with Kane, if Real Madrid decides, you know, if Modric, let's say, for example, breaks his leg, God forbid he doesn't, on the weekend, they could just say, you know what, Tottenham... boom, King's ransom for Modric.
My friend.
For Eriksen.
My friend, the English teams had a rough deal last year with players agitating to leave. Remember Coutinho,
yeah.
Van Dijk at Southampton, some players refusing to train and all that. So, you know, this was meant to happen. It's unfortunate that the rest of Europe wanted to wait a year later. But the Premier League always tries to be the Premier League. And the way it is right now, it's left for the clubs if they want to. I mean, someone said something about, oh, there's no way United was going to sell Pogba to anyone. Mm. Well, we've seen that, but let's see if they can hold on to him.
Fair point. Especially what you're saying, Ola. You mentioned Kane at Spurs. What if, you know, yes, there's talks now that Hazard is going to sign a new deal, but what if he doesn't? What if he actually, you know, within these last sort of 2 weeks, Madrid come and say 200 million?
I mean, look what at Mino Pogba, Raiola's comment the other day, saying that, you know,
he'd
have a sleepless night trying to find, you know, a new club for Pogba.
I wouldn't take the agents. The agents look after themselves more than, I mean, Philippe Coutinho could have stayed till end of the season and still gone to Barcelona. But the agent, you know, he wants his money right now and he tries to push that. But I don't think at the end of the day, some of these clubs, United, for instance, they are beginning to say, we're also a big club. Mm. I mean, they wanted Ronaldo, except Ronaldo didn't want to play fullback.
Nobody wanted Ronaldo. I did not want Ronaldo back at Manchester United.
There's a reason why Ronaldo didn't want to come there. Jose Mourinho still there.
I am okay with that man. But let's quickly move on to African players doing or playing their trade in the Premier League. Which any particular African player that stood out for you over the weekend?
I have to say Mohamed Salah and Mane and Keita.
Liverpool players.
Hang on.
That's what he wants to say.
Didn't take long.
They're becoming the axes of evil at Liverpool. You know,
are they now the MSK? The MSK now.
Yes, and you know, to an extent, I think Riyad Mahrez, you know, shows that he's actually meant to be a big game player.
Yeah,
so he's starting at Man City, which is brilliant.
I saw an interview with him where he says, you know, he's willing to bide his time at City. He knows that he's not gonna, you know, sort of just walk straight into the lineup because that's how strong they are. Mm. But you know, just to have him as far as City are concerned.
Well, also complain about Ozil not firing. Mm. I thought Alexi Iwobi did very well.
He did.
Yeah, he set up the first goal and finished the second one brilliantly. He even had another chance, but I think
he should have put that away.
That would have been the icing on the cake. But I think that maybe they need to start looking at Alexi Iwobi as another outlet for creativity, because he does that very well for Nigeria. And probably Unai Emery needs to look at Ozil and say maybe Ozil needs to sit out some games and give this young kid a chance.
I understand with the whole difficult start as far as Arsenal are concerned, but I'm sure for Emery it's a nice headache to have when you have someone
from an
like
Africa
Iwobi.
Perspective, I thought Baye for United was awful.
And this is the thing with Eric Bailly. He went from being United's best player in the opening game,
to
being probably their worst in the second game.
I think in
a
way, Lindelof didn't help him. Mm. There was this particular moment where Bailly was... They were like miles apart. They were not playing close enough. But that's also because Juan Mata wasn't tracking back. Mm. And so it left Young pretty exposed, and then Bailly had to come out, and that made for
take nothing away from Bailly. I still think he's a fantastic defender, but he did not have a good game against Brighton. And that is the Premier League in all its shapes and sizes, and all the good and the bad as far as England's top flight is concerned.
Makes us better? Rivalry. This is the Absa Premiership.
Bring it closer to home now, South African football. Plenty coming out of Kaizer Chiefs. Yes, they have not had a great start to the season, but what they have done in the past day or two has brought in a number of good players as well, and good as far as the South African context is concerned. Ola, Lebohang Manyama back in South Africa, and some would say 2 years too late in joining Amakhosi.
You know what? I'm actually not sure about this move because, you know, the last time I saw Wanyama play, he had a fantastic season.
Yeah, he did.
You know, and it's now a year and a half, 2 years later.
Yeah.
I don't know. And, you know, in Chiefs' case, it sounds like it looks like a desperate move. Mm. They're still to win a game this season in the league. And I think they need something also to appease their fans, because we all know our Chiefs fans, when things turn sour, how quickly they can just go against the team. And look, I think Wanyama's a good player and he's going to add value to Chiefs. But Chiefs' problem, to be honest with you, defensively, I mean, they're still trying to get Godinho back. I don't know if they successfully did get him back from loan. Defensively, they're a mess. And Wanyama's an attacking player, so I'm not sure if that's going to solve their problems.
Well, they've just brought in Mario Boyson as well, which has been confirmed. So yeah, maybe they are trying to fix that.
With Chiefs, it'll be interesting to see what happens to them in the MTN 8 semifinals. Mm. They, in the league, they've just had this really, really convincing start to the season. You know, three draws and a defeat. I think that Wanyama seems like a panic buy, but also maybe he was available.
Yeah.
Because if you consider that Wanyama, you know, at the end of January till the end of the season, he didn't have any game time in Turkey. Mm. So we all know what he's capable of doing. But one thing I've seen with Wanyama is that when he plays in Cape Town, he kind of does very well. But whenever he comes down
that's true as well.
this way to play for any of the teams down here, it's almost like
somehow
he misses the sea.
Yeah.
You know, because for someone who was born in Alex, you would imagine that, you know, he'll be at home here.
Comfortable
but,
and comfortable.
You know, every time he's gone, I mean, when he was at Ajax and especially when he was at Cape Town City, I thought he was, you know, 2 seasons ago, I thought he was probably the best player in the league.
He really was. And I think, you know what, I think what Chiefs are doing now is perhaps, which is maybe natural, is that I think they're giving Coach Salinas, you know, less of an opportunity to complain as far as the squad is concerned. Because I think that if you look at the attacking options, perhaps a bit more, you know, players that can add as far as going forward is concerned. And maybe, as we've seen so far this season, give the likes of Shaba some time on the bench as well to, you know, just to manage them. But having Wanyama there, someone like Mahlasela as well, you know, the likes of Maluleka still to come back from injury. You know, these are players, Njangase started really well. These are players that can add a lot of quality to Chiefs. So I'm hoping, you know, as a Chiefs fan as well, that, you know, it does give them or galvanize them, especially going into the MTN 8 semi-final.
I think that what Wanyama just briefly also is going to bring is leadership.
Yeah.
Because I think he's one part
He's a born leader.
Leadership.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and that's you know, a lot of credit to him as far as that is concerned. But it takes us back to the whole debate about South African football players and are they good enough? Do they go to Europe thinking, you know what, I'm going to make something out of this? Or, you know, because we've seen too much of a thing happening now with them going and then literally 6 months later coming back. Are they good enough to be plying their trade in the top leagues in Europe?
I think South African players are good enough to play anywhere. In fact, if you ask me, I think over the last 20 years that I've followed South African football from very close range, I have to say that in Africa, they're probably amongst the most naturally talented players. However, I think that, you know, a lot of Diski and the whole Kasi.
Is it a coaching thing then, maybe?
I think it's an orientation problem.
Yeah.
Because the first thought of most of those players, especially the ones from the townships, is entertainment. Mm. You know, you find a cross comes through that a player could actually volley. The first thing he wants to do is to kill the ball.
Yeah.
And then he kills the ball, he does some extra extra fancy
some sugar things.
Like he's taking a selfie. And then the crowd goes and then he thinks about that. And then when they go to Europe and find that nobody has time for that.
Yeah.
You know, and so you find that the players who have gone to Europe and done well, Lucas Radebe, Benny McCarthy, Stephen Pienaar. These are players who are a lot more business-like in their approach to football. Yeah. A lot of these really skillful players. Even if you check Dr. Kumalo, you know, when he went to Europe, he didn't exactly light up things because Dr., first time I saw him play for South Africa against Nigeria, I thought, you know, this guy is just going to, him and Shoes, you know, the Shoes, you know, did well in Europe as he well. Did. But, you know, the players need to realize that football has moved forward. And, you know, to an extent, I think maybe the coaching also needs to change in terms of what we saw from the World Cup, where teams are now built around more, you know, teamwork ethic, and, you know, they use a lot of the data in terms of what each player is capable of doing. Now, in the case of South African players, when you do all those fancy tricks, those things don't get measured.
They don't add to the team anyway.
They don't add to the result orientation.
Yeah.
So if you are in a circus, maybe playing freestyle.
Take Gazi football to the circus. That's
Look, Amika, okay. South African players are good enough to play overseas, okay? We have players there, clearly, right? The problem, I think, with South African players is that there's a grind that they just need to be, you know, they need to get into their minds that, you know what...
Is that a purely South African issue?
I'll tell you why it's a South African issue, right? Because this league, the PSL, is a fantastic league. The pay is good, right? So you're a king here. But when you go overseas, you're battling against not only guys from Cote d'Ivoire, Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, Algeria. There's a guy from Turkey. There's a guy from Uruguay. There's a guy from Panama. There's a guy. So you're battling against guys that also want the same spot.
Yeah.
That requires a great degree of hustle and mental fortitude. Here, you know, it's a bit too comfortable here. And you get paid well, right? So the structures don't actually push you to be at your excellent best. They don't push you to go to the next level. So when our guys unfortunately leave here, I think there is a tendency for them to look back at what they're leaving as opposed to going there thinking about what there is to create. And that is why
I agree with you and I can add something else. I think the fact that look, if you take a typical player from West Africa, when he goes out from West Africa and goes to Europe, he finds a much more sophisticated society and he doesn't want to go back to where he's coming from. The players in South Africa, I mean, look, if you've been around Europe, there are places where you go to in Europe that are not even half as developed as South Africa. So when you come into South Africa, the first time I came to South Africa, I remember saying to myself, you know, this could be Holland or Germany, because I was seeing the road signs in Afrikaans and, you know, brilliant roads. Everything about South Africa just says that it could comfortably fit into somewhere in Europe. So but from the footballing point of view, the clubs are well organized, the pitches are good, players, you know, live comfortably because you can afford to buy a car and all that. So the question with the West African players is, when they go there,
it's all or nothing.
I'm going to try and make it.
Yeah.
And that motivation, unfortunately, is not there. And they come back, when they come back from Europe, they even get a better deal here. And then secondly, in some of those countries in Europe, some of the players don't earn maybe more here. And then with the money that you earn there, and the taxes that you pay, and the cost of living.
You
can afford to buy a house and get things.
Amika, look at France, for example. The players in France get taxed a lot. So you might earn a lot in France, but then I think the tax is like 60% of that gets taxed.
Absolutely ridiculous.
The other thing I was going to say is that one thing our players, unfortunately, I think they still don't get this, is that when you're going overseas, which is how you should be acting here in the first place, it's a job, right? It's a job. So the weather might not be nice. The people might not be friendly. The food might not be to your liking, but you're there to do a job. And because they know back home, comfort, you know, everything that they would ever need is back home. And I think that's what separates the South African players to the African players. The African players, when they leave, they know, listen, it's all or nothing. And I have to leave here and go do a job.
Let's touch quickly on some of the players that we, you know, sort of aren't speaking about. I mean, someone like Tokelo Randi, who, you know, went from being, you know, Bournemouth's record signing to, you know, clubless right now. May Mahlangu, sixth European club already, he's at Ludogorets now. Kimmy Rasmus, another one who's, you know, had,
he's had good moves.
Season here, season there.
He's had good moves, but he just hasn't hit the peak because he's played for really good clubs. Mm. Some players go from Africa, they go from South Africa and they go to Sweden or go to some of the other leagues. But in the case of Clement, he's gone to some really good clubs, but just hasn't, lit any bulbs there.
He hasn't. And the one thing I want to highlight with all these names, Dinyon Drover as well now playing in the Chinese second division, is that a lot of these players are hardly 28. Which is where they should be, I guess in the peak of their years. So they've played for multiple European clubs, but they're hardly 28, which means they've spent on average less than 2 years at each club, which is in many other ways, an issue itself.
You see, two things that I think we need to call to question here is one of which, where is the agent in all of this, right? Because the agent is supposed to get the player's best deal. Yeah. You see Mino Raiola, right, all over TV, ready to get Pogba the maximum deal, right? And I think it's about time we start asking the agents, is Dinyon Drover, second division China, that's the best you could get, right? Maybe we start
someone who's
running
the other thing,
that was playing at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah. If somebody doesn't want him in the top leagues, he has to end up where someone is willing to take him. Otherwise, he's not going to play, and then it's even worse.
Which comes to my second point is that, I think the players also have to accept that, guys, first of all, I always believe you have to gamble on your own talent. Mm. You have to do that, right? Then you have to ask yourself, okay, am I as good as what I think I am, or am I, the average? But if you're the average and, you can't find some of the top clubs, that's still fine because you're at the highest level, you're playing against the best players, and again, it's a job.
At
home, sitting on the couches, sitting in the stands, we see it as entertainment.
Yeah.
But this is still a job for these guys.
And in agreeing with you, before we take a bit of a short break, in agreeing with you, I look at someone like Steven Pienaar, who when he left South Africa and went to Ajax Amsterdam, was an attacking midfielder of the highest quality. And he got to Ajax and he performed in that role and got some rave reviews from the likes of Madrid and so forth. The minute he left Holland to go to
Dortmund.
That little period was difficult for him. It was difficult. But when he finally did find a home in England, his role changed. He had to change his role. He had to go from saying, I'm an attacking midfielder and nothing else. And Everton were like, no, but you're going to play wherever we need you. And he was able and willing to change that mindset of his. And he's got a home now at Everton Football Club. They love him, So it is that willingness to
and
work.
I mean, for Tottenham,
yeah.
I remember, when Tottenham signed Steven Pienaar, right? They were looking at signing some other players. I know they were also looking at Danny Parejo, who's at Valencia now. They were looking at guys to fill that role. And they said, we believe in this guy so much. And unfortunately, the injuries. So see it through, my advice to the players.
Yeah.
See it through. You never know. But I think the mentality you have to have is, I'm here to do a job and I need to be the best at my job.
When you get a chance, I think the my charge is when you get a chance to go to Europe, that is where you have to be with the best.
Absolutely.
If you're only king of South Africa, nobody will rate you globally. Once you've proven yourself here and you have a chance to go to Europe, try and stick it out.
Well, it's not all bad as far as South African players are concerned. And I guess in going to that break, we have to mention the likes of Lebo Motiba, who is really doing well for Lille, and Bongani Zungwa as well, who's, on the radar for a lot of some really, really, really big clubs in Europe. And they really want, or rather are looking at him. So it's not all bad for South African footballers. We just wish that there were more who are doing a bit more in their roles over in Europe. We're going to take a bit of a short break. We'll be back right after this.
Want to witness the world's best football leagues from a front row seat? SuperSport puts you front and center for all the scintillating action of the Premier League, La Liga, UEFA Champions League, the new UEFA Nations League, and Abza Premiership and now the Serie A. Follow the stars in every game that matters. Live in HD. The 2018-19 season. It's Front Row Football on SuperSport.
Welcome back to Pitch Invasion. We've just had a nice and a serious look at what is happening over in the Premier League and in South African football. We're going to take our jackets off and our ties off a bit and just enjoy this little period now, because we're going to touch on the start of La Liga and Serie A, and we can't look too further beyond Lionel Messi and his feats over the weekend. Yet another double for him, another fine performance, and 6,000th goal for Barcelona that he scored. Not his 6,000th, but of course the 6,000 La Liga goal that Barcelona have scored. And this after he also scored the 5,000th for the Blaugrana. Ola, are we going to expect anything different from Lionel Messi this season as captain as well?
No, I think, you know, Messi's one of those players where, you know, his standard is so high that, you know, you almost... I mean, what, we're 12 to 15 seasons in now, and, you know, when have we seen any sign that he's going to tailor off? Yeah. I think it's going to be business as usual for him and Barcelona. And I think we're going to be seeing the same old Messi that we see every year.
And I mean, the big question so far is, or has been, is the lack of Ronaldo in La Liga going to sort of demotivate Messi in terms of his performances? From what we've seen, it's not going to, but your thoughts on that, Mick?
Well, look, Lionel Messi is not going to move
to Liverpool. He's definitely not going to move to Liverpool. Yeah. Can we get that clear? We don't want him as well.
I think he'll be very happy that Ronaldo is not there.
Mm. Really?
Yes, because, you know, somehow, whatever he does, Ronaldo kind of takes some of the shine off him. I was there when he scored the 5,000th goal. Yeah. I was at Camp Nou. And so I almost can't believe now that it's already 6,000 goals. Tells you how much the teams in Spain are so attacking. And then I was watching Serie A last week and seeing how difficult it was for teams to score goals. So Messi is, you know, quite rightly one of the greatest players ever. And he will continue to do his thing. What I like about Messi is that he doesn't look at anybody. He just...
Focuses
and does it. Whereas Ronaldo always wants to be the best and takes on every single record. So
let me put it this way: it's very easy to focus on your own game when your game is, you know, the game that Lionel Messi does possess. I want to ask, as a captain though, do you believe that's a good move from Barcelona, making him captain?
I mean, he's the leader of the team. Mm. And, you know, we've seen him captain Argentina with maybe not too great results, but he's more of a Barcelona player. He's been there since he was 13. So, quite rightly, after Iniesta, he's the natural leader to talk about the team. Because Pique, who maybe would have been a good choice as captain, actually left Barcelona, went to United, and then came back. So Messi was already well established when he came back. And by the way, Pique is more into tennis these days, another business. He's a multi-billion sports empire. So I think that it's a good move, and maybe without competition from Madrid, enough competition from Madrid and Atletico, he might lead them to his first title as a captain.
Let's speak about Real Madrid. And I remember I said this comment the last time, that Madrid are going to perhaps play better football without Ronaldo, but they're going to win less. And your thoughts on that? Do you you know, sort of agree with those sentiments?
You know, I've always said that Cristiano Ronaldo is a fantastic finisher. Mm. He's possibly one of the greatest to get on the end of things. Mm. But in terms of the construction of play, right, he's more at the end of it. And Real Madrid have a squad of constructors.
Yeah.
There's Isco, there's Modric, there's Kroos, there's Asensio.
Yeah.
And I think those guys will have more freedom now in terms of expressing themselves, because some of those guys, you know, they couldn't get into the final third in those attacking areas because in Ronaldo's way. And it's going to be interesting with Madrid now, because, you know, with Ronaldo not there, there's going to be a demand for all these other guys to actually start scoring goals.
Yeah,
and I'm not talking about 10 goals. I mean, Bale, your 15, 20 might have to be 30.
Yeah.
Benzema, we can't expect 20, 30 from you, but it might have to be 20 at least. And it's going to put some pressure on the guys to score more goals, because the 40 that Ronaldo leaves with somebody or a group of guys have to fill in.
There is no one there who is going to score those number of goals.
But
there
hence will, I say a group
will,
of guys.
They will have to go out and buy.
I think this is where maybe Gareth Bale, you know, his ability as a footballer, you know, sort of fails him. If because I feel Bale, the difference between him and Ronaldo is that Bale, you know, wants to be on the ball, wants to go towards the ball. Whereas he's shown that if you put him in the box, Bale can jump as high as Ronaldo.
Oh, yeah,
Bale can score, you know, score left foot, right foot, as much as Ronaldo. It's just that he's not going to be the type of player that says,
as well.
He's not going to be the type of player that says, you know what, I'm going to be in the box and nowhere else. He's going to come out wide and he's going to try to take players on.
There's only one CR7. I told you a story about when I was a kid and there was this guy in England who was scoring a lot of goals. There's Brian Robson who played for Manchester United.
Yes.
But there was another Brian Robson as well who was called Brian Pop Robson. When you have the time, go on Google. Brian Pop Robson will score. He's like Ronaldo. He waits there and the ball comes in, he scores.
And
you know, Gareth Bale is not that kind of player. Bale, like you said, you know, he likes to get involved in the play. But CR7 is one guy who is like he's like a hired assassin.
No, he is.
You know, he's a marksman. He goes and waits for his target and doesn't miss. So,
as far as Madrid are concerned, you know, are we starting to see them? I mean, it's nice and early in the season, but are we starting to see how much they're going to miss him? They lost the European Super Cup to Atletico. The attendance at the Bernabeu in their first game.
That was down.
Bruce Springsteen pulls in more numbers.
What you'll find is that even on social media, there's a massive correlation. Real Madrid's fan base dropped a bit. And funny enough, this month after the World Cup was the first time Real Madrid was going top of the social media table as the club with the highest number of fans.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden they lose Ronaldo and Juventus is climbing.
Yeah.
And Real Madrid is
but you know what, Amika, to me, you know, it's just part and parcel of, you know, when you have a big player that moves on. It's not different like you see in Formula One. You know, you had Ferrari fans, you had Michael Schumacher fans. Yeah. Like you saw with Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton McLaren.
Yes.
When Hamilton was at McLaren, right? You had McLaren fans and you had Lewis Hamilton fans, right? So it happens in football where some guys just do support the player, but, you know, supporting the team.
You've got a generation of fans now who follow the player. They don't necessarily follow the club.
Yeah. Exactly.
So you find in the past, I mean, I've always supported Liverpool. And as much as I have affinity for Madrid when it comes to Spain and all that, these days you have fans who are more like, okay, in Spain I support Barcelona, in England I support this, that. You know, so you've got those kind of situations. But what is even more is Ronaldo, Messi, Neymar, Zlatan.
Yeah.
There are about five, or even Ozil, there are about five or six players who are juggernauts when it comes to marketing.
Can you remove Mesut Ozil? You've just named Ronaldo, Messi. No. Can you remove Mesut Ozil
from a fan base? Mesut Ozil is still probably the biggest star in the Premier League. Now that Zlatan is not there, he's probably the biggest.
You know what? Actually, I wouldn't disagree with that. I'm trying to think of a player that, from a fan perspective, you know, pulls in more in England than Ozil.
Here's the thing, right? I don't want to get too as much, right? I'll stay with
Ronaldo. No, we're not talking about his performance. Right? We're just staying as a
fans, okay?
Yeah.
You see, for me, right, with Ronaldo specifically, okay, this is where sports as a whole, not just football, branding, the players these days are realizing their worth. They've seen Michael Jordan, right? They've seen what he's done and he's built an empire. They've seen Tiger Woods. They've seen Roger Federer right now. They've seen Serena Williams.
David Beckham is the best example.
In football, right? So they now know, listen, this club will always be there. I won't. I need my own fans. I need my own followers. I need my own worshippers, you know? So I'm not surprised that Ronaldo, through his marketing, CR7, the celebrations, he's got his own movie or documentary, whatever you want to call it. So that has built his own fan base. So with him going to Juventus, he's taken a large number of those.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean all those guys and girls were Madrid fans.
No.
It boils down to the
marketing aspect of it now, because you have a situation where, you know, when Neymar went to PSG, shirt sales, skyrocketed. Same with Ronaldo when he moved to Juventus. So we get into a point where we just have to understand that there's a lot more to this game than just what happens on the pitch. There's also another battle on the digital plane, which counts for everything now.
Well, we're speaking about battles, and Juventus have got a big battle coming up in Serie A. Not only in their next game, but of course, as far as the season is concerned, yes, they are champions, 7-time champions in a row. Game one didn't go according to plan as far as Ronaldo was concerned, but Juventus still managed to get their win. I think you touched on this, how difficult it is going to be for Ronaldo to find the back of the net with as much regularity as he did in Spain.
Ronaldo needs to understand that at Juventus, you know, he's going to have to settle into the team. Mm. One of the first things he needs to try and do is try and play provider. Mm. Just like how Salah realized he had to play provider. Mm. Because, he's going to be tightly marked. And we saw in that game, you know, one the funniest part of the game was how he was frowning the entire time.
Yeah, he was.
And then, you know, he supposedly gets a goal, or they get a goal where he goes and clatters the keeper, and then, you know, something remarkable happened. First of all, it was goal line technology saying it was a goal. And then VAR overruling goal line
technology. And he hospitalizes
And then you see Ronaldo's face. He's all gloomy and so on. And then when they finally get the goal, and you see the smile that lights up his face, it was really comical. I mean, I thought, you know, Ronaldo's facial expression throughout that game just typifies how much of a competitive guy he is, and then secondly, how individualistic he is. He wants to be the one to take all the glory. I mean, he could be provider, because Mario Mandzukic came off the bench and was the difference for Juve.
He's got another chance now up against perhaps the team that's going to be challenging Juventus for the title once again in Napoli. Hola.
Look, he is going to score, right? Let's just calm down, everybody. He will score. Okay. When that is, we don't know. But, you know, against Napoli, it's going to be interesting. The battle with Koulibaly against Ronaldo. Because Koulibaly is one of those defenders that you could leave him to man-mark somebody.
Absolutely.
He's got the pace, he's got the strength.
Yeah.
And he's really good at defending. And he's good in the air as well. And physically strong. So I think that's going to be challenging. But, you know, one thing that Ronaldo does have over a lot of forwards is that, you know, there's something that you often can't explain. But I'll leave it as he just knows how to get there.
Yeah.
He just knows how to get there. The ball will be in the box, but he will be there. Mm. And
we all thought Chiellini and Co would deal with him, and then he goes and scores a spectacular bicycle. Ronaldo, you know, he's always primed when he has to play against the really good defenders. Mm. You know, I agree with you, he will score, and I make no mistake about it. I think that he's going to find that.
Give me a number. How many do you think he'll find this season?
27.
27 league alone.
27 league goals. Okay. I don't know about in all competition. Look, he eats the Champions League alive.
I think he might score
27
more.
League goals.
I think he might score more, because ultimately
Once he gets
used to the players, Ronaldo will get his hat tricks, because he's going to score free kicks. He's going to score. He want to play penalties. He will score.
Which sort of two or three teams do you think will be pushing Juve based on what we saw from
Inter Milan
the weekend? I think Inter are going to be.
I'm sorry.
Despite their loss,
you know, I watched Inter on the weekend. They were terrible, and they signed so many players, and they won Modric after that loss, right? So they can forget about.
They honestly didn't give me too much hope either.
I really think, you know what? Roma looked good. Okay, I know they needed a late winner, but you know they've got an interesting batch of players.
Yeah,
and I think Roma are going to push hard this year. Okay, I was being too harsh on Inter. Once maybe their players settle.
Yeah.
It's one game, my friend.
I still think Roma, you know, based on their signings.
Napoli?
Yeah, Roma is a good side. So let's put in Roma, Napoli, and Inter Milan.
Okay, so that's...
What a shame that AC Milan is not even in this
terrible.
Discussion.
Well, AC Milan is... They're going through a rebuilding process. Let's give them another 1 year. And what you never know. I mean, this is... Serie A.
And they're trying to poach Ivan Gazidis from Arsenal, AC Milan. So, you know, who knows if they get that deal through.
We'll see how Serie A goes. But I must say, it's good to see it back again. It's good to be catching up on the best of Italian football. And based on what we saw in week one, there's going to be some really interesting results.
A lot of people are going to watch it because, yeah. You know, that Juve game gave people...
Yeah.
Most people would have thought, you know, Juve will steamroll Chievo, but I thought Chievo were just unbelievable. They almost had that game sewn up.
And here's something I didn't realize, that Spal, that team, was in Serie A last season as well. I thought they were new to the top flight. And
Parma is a team that looks like a new team, but this was one of the iconic teams of the 90s.
The former great Parma, Lilian Thuram, you know, Buffon himself.
I think it'll do Italian football the world of good if they get back to somewhere near those glory days. But let's move on to some general news making headlines in the world of football. I'm going to start with South African football, where I don't know if we are too surprised, Gola, in the fact that Dan Malisela is no longer coach at Chipper United.
You know what? When I saw this, honestly, I had to check my calendar to see if it was April 1st, because I couldn't believe this. I really couldn't believe it.
2 weeks into the season.
I couldn't believe this. And, you know, when they brought Dan Malisela, I thought they brought him in because, you know, he has that X factor in terms of motivating players, and he galvanizes the team. He's a really good guy in the dressing room, from what I hear. And I thought, you know, okay, they've learned from their mistakes.
Are you saying you were surprised?
To be honest, I was.
Chipper United.
They sacked it. Kim Kardashian's marriage to, what was that basketball player, was longer than this.
No, I think...
That's how surprised I am.
Chipper United sacking their coach is like... it's like butter on bread. You know? Always.
It's something that, you know, we
have this saying... In the office, when it comes to Chipper, that, you know, let's just keep looking at the breaking news and see if there's...
You know they'll feature there somewhere.
Chipper, I mean, how many coaches have they had in the last few years? Probably like 15 or so.
We can't even count. We can't count.
So
Are you surprised in who they brought in to replace?
I must say that I was quite surprised because I don't think any of this... top coaches who want to go there because you know it's like when you go to Chelsea.
It's a job, I mean.
You might be fired by Abramovich.
A couple of months later, yeah.
But Eric Tinkler, you know, he's done well. He's done well with Cape Town City. He's done well. Did well with Orlando Pirates, and also did well with SuperSport United.
Yeah.
So he seems like a proven guy, but he's been blessed that. Most of the jobs that he's done in the Premier League are with the top teams, starting with Orlando Pirates.
Yeah, so did a great job.
So he might have to see what it's like to take on a team that is not one of those traditional powers.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tinkler is one of those coaches that, you know, do not have a lot to prove in terms of what they're good at, but maybe he might convince Chipper to let him stick for a while longer.
I must say, speaking to some colleagues in as far as the APSA Premiership is concerned, and, you know, just going through who they feel will be relegated this season, yes, it is very early, but Chipper United came up quite regularly, so it'll be interesting to see if that sort of that dynamic does change with Eric.
I don't think they're going to be relegated. I think that
we'll see.
He struggled in his last season at SuperSport.
That's what people said about Vince with Roger those years ago.
I know, but
when a club is in turmoil, something's got to give.
Yeah.
How many weeks into the season?
Amika, we're 3 weeks into the season.
There's still room to Chiefs haven't won any game, so.
But you would rather put your money on Chiefs rebounding than Cheaper coming back and, you know, not saving themselves from...
I hope we don't see another change at Cheaper.
Here's another surprise. I don't know if it is much of a surprise. I'm going to come to you, Emeka. Samuel Eto, still playing, first and foremost, and on the move again.
Samuel Eto is... He's a great athlete.
Mm.
And the good thing about Samuel Eto'o, I mean, I've known him from when he was at Mallorca, and then he played with Enidi.
Yeah.
He was a very young kid when he was at Real Madrid before he went to Mallorca. And, you know, because he's been around for so long, people think that he's so old. The good thing about it is that if you look after yourself and you keep yourself in good shape, you know, you can see the goods. And where is he going to? He's going to Qatar.
Is it not time for him to just look at his roots though?
He's going to Qatar where he's going to get a good pay. So
and you'll probably get some ambassador role somewhere along the line.
You know, he might just become an ambassador for the 2022. So I think it's a smart move. If Eto still feels he can play, why not? I mean, you look at Ronaldo still playing. So
look, I feel, you know, players like Eto, they're very smart. They can see the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So him going to Qatar, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere along the line there's some ambassador role in for him where he's going to be, you know, the face of the league, or he's going to represent it in some way or another. I wouldn't be surprised because, you know, Eto, he loves football, clearly. This is the one criticism I had about Ronaldinho. I know, slightly off topic, because I watch guys like Pirlo play well into the late ages, Lampard, and I'm like, couldn't Ronaldinho just carry on and Drogba played? Look at Drogba, what he's done. So Eto, like Amika said, he's looked after himself. He feels like he still can play. Why not? He's earned the stripes.
Talking about Ronaldinho, I saw him play FIFA Under 20 World Cup in Nigeria in 99. He was in that World Cup with Ashley Cole, Xavi, Iker Casillas, Roque Santa Cruz from Paraguay, Junichi Inamoto from... These are the guys who played in that tournament. Seydou Keita was the player of the tournament. So, when you look at these guys, I mean, Samuel Eto'o is 37. Roger Miller played and scored in the World Cup at 42. You know, Eto'o looks fit. If you see him, he looks fit. And if you're fit, a player like Ronaldo, I think, can play up till he's 39 or 40.
Easily.
So, 45.
So, I mean, look, I was quite thrilled when I saw that he played. And don't be surprised if he goes there and bangs in some goals.
Oh, but... a good move as far as Paul and Amika are concerned with Samuel Eto'o. We're going to move on to La Liga captains and having plenty to say about this America game. Your thoughts on that, Ola?
You know, it's interesting because for me, it's just the hallmarks of capitalism. Capitalism, right? La Liga want to expand the league. They want to export it to, you know, whoever's interested.
Yeah.
And they want to grow the game. Good for the league. I just don't think the captains should get involved because the league are doing what they need to do to protect the interests of the league. The players, you get paid well, you get looked after by your clubs.
Yeah.
So what if you have to play one or two games, you know, in Kansas City?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So what? Because the NFL, you can see, and the NBA, they're trying to grow their leagues.
Absolutely.
They play at Wembley.
Yeah.
They play
at
the O2 Arena. And I think the captains need to look beyond just what they think, you know, is in their interest and start looking at the bigger picture. This is for the league, not for them.
I just have to say that, I think that the La Liga has done well in the last 2-3 years. They've really gone aggressive. They've realized that, you know, wait a minute, we produce the European champions all the time.
Yeah.
And they've tried to try and catch up with what the Premier League has done. Years ago, Richard Scudamore tried to create a 39th Premier League game, you know, overseas.
Yeah.
It was knocked down by clubs and players. And I'm surprised that, you know, with Spain, who would naturally oppose this would have been Real Madrid and Barcelona, who usually for a long time they had to beg them to agree to a joint deal. They used to have their own deal separate from the other TV deal for everyone. But one thing we've seen with La Liga is they've set up offices across Africa. They have an office in Johannesburg. They have one in Nigeria. They have across Africa, across the world. I went to a conference last year and I met about 8 La Liga regional directors from different parts of the world. One thing they've done right is they're prepared to push the boundaries. They were one of the first. They signed a deal with Facebook in the Indian subcontinent to stream all 380 games live on for free on Facebook. And now they've also they had an experiment with the El Clasico in Miami, and it was sold out. So, you know, playing the game in America is a no-brainer because the whole of
The other thing, Amika, Spanish-speaking people.
Exactly. That's what I was coming to.
That's the
whole
thing.
Of the South America is mostly Spanish-speaking, apart from Brazil and maybe Guyana. And then you find that in America, in the U.S., Mexico is all Spanish-speaking. In the U.S.,
second language, Spain.
Spanish is the second highest spoken language in the country. So it pays them from a business point of view, and let me tell you, they're not going to win this battle. It's like, you know, the Davis Cup. where Piquet's company went and proposed a new deal with them. It was opposed by Boris Becker, Leighton Hewitt, and all the older players. But the guys who are playing now realize that, wait a minute, $2.7 billion coming into national team tennis, and the players are going to earn something out of it. They're all for it. The current players who are there all for it. So, I mean, these players can complete all the moves they want, but it's the business, the money.
Taking a business decision.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
And well, it helps. It helps when you do have a Real Madrid or Barcelona, two of, you know, probably the biggest brands, sporting brands, you know, across all sporting codes in the world. Wrapping that up and moving on to our favorite part of the show, which is always the fantasy and having a look at what the various players in England's top flight have to offer. Again, really happy with Richarlison in my team. He's got
late
me yet another goal.
Late by.
And Aguero is my man.
Oof.
I told him the first week.
There's another man.
I said, it doesn't matter what Jesus and Jesus is his name. Gabriel, Aguero is still the man.
I saw that first goal, and I was just like, there aren't many strikers who are that just composed. I couldn't believe it. I honestly couldn't believe it.
But hats off to those that took the gamble and put him as triple the captain. So,
nice and early. Yeah. Well, look, it worked. It worked, didn't it? It worked.
And Sadio Mane,
he's another one that I think. Well, at the moment, he's winning the battle between himself and
him and Salah.
No, I don't think so. I just think that, you know, they realize that, look, for them to win, sometimes it's who's best placed. Yeah. You know, and if you look at that game, there were times where Firmino and even Mane created chances for Salah. But at that moment, that goal reminded me of the Arsenal goal from the last season where, you know, they both ran in front of them.
One thing
I loved about Mane was how he ran in front of the defender, which meant that
Foul, red card, penalty.
No, I think he's. I don't know if we did touch on this last time as well. He's realized that, you know, he's going to have to also. It's not going to just come naturally because, you know, he's a former Liverpool Player of the Year. He's going to have to earn his right
fast,
to be.
Everyone talks about Salah being fast. Yeah. I think that Mane is also incredibly fast.
Yeah, which can only be good for Liverpool, I guess, if you've got both of them, you know, looking to beat the other two scoring goals. That's with Liverpool, though. As far as maybe from an Arsenal point of view,
man,
which players do you think you want to add onto your fantasy team?
Again, to our millions of listeners, I said on the first episode, Guendouzi.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wait. Fantasy or just as his...
Fantasy, right?
How on earth?
One, he's cheap, right? I know usually holding midfielders don't get many points.
Right.
But you saw Kante in the first game when he does get forward. I'm telling you now, Guendouzi, he will be given more room to shoot. He's a threat in the air. And I see more bonus performances coming out of that guy in games to come. And I think he's going to be one heck of a poach. I'm sure he's gone up by 0.1, but I know Guendouzi's still 5 million.
Is anybody looking at Virgil van Dijk?
You know what? Again, with Liverpool, they are Burnley away from everything just crashing down. I know you've had two good games.
They haven't considered
Sam
a goal.
Vokes is going to come there.
They haven't.
It's the end of story.
They haven't considered a goal.
So I'm easy with Liverpool defenders. Although Trent Alexander-Arnold, I have him. And
I think either of the wingbacks, either of Liverpool's wingbacks will give you plenty of points. Yeah, that's true. That is an issue.
And Eden Hazard?
Is he staying?
I think he will stay.
Is he staying?
My thing with Hazard for fantasy is that
they haven't started him.
In his position, there are so many...
But he was decisive when he came on.
There's so many players that can give you that, you know, and perhaps a bit more cheap as well than Hazard, you know. So I'm not sure.
You're right, Lossi. My problem with Hazard is that when I look at him and then you look at De Bruyne, 14, 13 odd goals with like 17, 18 assists.
Yeah.
And, you know, bonus performances. So that's, you know, Hazard is a good buy. Don't get me wrong. If you can have Hazard and other players, but I still think, De Bruyne is out now. But, you know, I don't know about Hazard. I'm not sure. One guy who's killing me, who you cannot buy, is Pep Guardiola. Who is going to start? Is it Sané? Is it Mahrez?
That's the issue.
Who? Because I had Sané. I'm thinking, okay, I'm sure he's going to give Aguero 2 goals. And, you know, David Silva starts. Then next week it's Gundogan. And
yeah,
he's killing my fantasy. Pep Guardiola is killing my fantasy.
Pep Guardiola has built an army. And he doesn't like people guessing his lineups.
Whether you're a fantasy manager or
not. Oh, he's killing me.
Sorry, Ola. Well, that is just a little view as to what the Fantasy Premier League has got to offer. It's only 2 weeks in, so there's still a lot to look forward to. Big game, though, coming up next week with United hosting Tottenham.
Mm.
Do you invest in that? Do you get a player or two in your fantasy from that game?
Tottenham, for some odd reason, Manchester United, stay kryptonite.
Mm.
You know, I'm actually going to pull my Tottenham players up from that game because I don't know what it is. At Old Trafford, Tottenham, something just doesn't work out.
Listen, most people didn't have Harry Kane in their team because they thought he doesn't score in August. Now he scored in August. And
you know what? Maybe. I might contradict myself. After Bailly's performance last week in Lindelof.
I will put Tottenham players in my lineup. Hmm.
Players or player?
I will put one or two.
Hmm.
You know, Dele Alli, maybe.
Okay. Well, Arsenal have got West Ham, so maybe it is time to invest in the likes of Mkhitaryan.
Oh, after that finishing.
It's not just a finishing. I think his performances have sort of picked up, you know, a level or two. So maybe it is time to invest in someone like him. Aubameyang, we're still yet to see, you know, him at his very best. Maybe Lacazette coming in can unlock that potential. But a lot to look forward to as far as fantasy is concerned. And to those who are near the top of their leagues, congratulations. For some of us who are still struggling to come to terms, a lot of work lies ahead. But that's it then for our fantasy league conversation. Let's quickly touch on these little stats from the past few weeks as far as top leagues are concerned. We saw 49 goals have been scored in 25 games in South African football, the Absa Premiership. The Premier League has got 60 in the opening 20. Serie A opening weekend, 21 goals in only 8 matches. La Liga opening weekend, 26 goals in 10 games. Can we read too much into that?
With Serie A, not surprised, because they usually lay a lot of emphasis on defending.
Mm.
Premier League, I think we'll even see more goals.
Yeah.
PSL, we know that we don't have 20 goals a season strikers.
Why don't we? That's always
because players spend so much time on the ball when they should be shooting. Mm. You know, there's got to be that whole orientation where when you're facing the goal. I mean, that's why I like you know, players who will shoot from a distance, like Plumpo Kekana. You know, he will shoot from center circle if he has the chance to shoot. Players in South Africa don't like to shoot.
Mm, okay, so maybe for those who are listening, if you are a player, just take a chance, man. You never know what would happen. Now, we certainly need to see those numbers as far as the Absa Premiership improve. Well, it's episode 3 done and dusted. I don't know if you have anything to add, Ola, as far as Arsenal and their prospects. Wins in 2 games.
If you look at the bookies, they have Arsenal thrashing West Ham. So we're getting back to winning ways. I see a nice 4-0 win against West Ham.
4-0 win.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
So Brighton beat Man United, and the players are looking forward to a trip to Anfield. And I remember last season was 5-1.
And they're looking forward to coming to Anfield.
They are looking forward to coming to Anfield. Goodness. So I would say another 5-0 for Liverpool.
And here's a big one. Here's a big one before we do close. United Spurs. Prediction, Ola?
Again, you know, Man United is kryptonite for Tottenham, and I think United are going to comfortably win this 2-0. We'll get Jose back to smiling and talking and being the special one again.
A win for Tottenham.
Win for Tottenham.
Yes, okay. 2-1.
We'll be touching on these predictions next time. But for episode 3, that's pretty much all we do have for you. In the closing, my name is Luazi Zikubu.
Hola, Makwaza.
And hey, you know who to support. Just go Brighton. Don't walk alone, man.
Go Brighton.
No, Liverpool, please. No, none of that. That's it for now. Cheers.